Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segreto, and this is Franchise Today. Boy, we're entering an exciting patch of Franchise Today, an exciting patch in franchising in general. Joining me today is my co-producer, Joe Caruso from the great state of Maryland. Joe, welcome today.
Thank you, Paul. Glad to be here as always.
You know, Joe, since we've been working together the last couple of years on Franchise Today, we've really had some fantastic guests and some very compelling topics. And you never cease to amaze me at some of the questions and discussion points that you provide me, as well as some of the guests that I have the pleasure of interviewing on the show. And this current stretch coming up, I think, just puts an exclamation point on the whole thing. Who do we have coming up as we're leading into the IFA convention and a busy time for franchising?
Well, it's kind of you to give the compliment, and I will say I think more credit is due to the quality of the guests and the content that they bring to the franchise community. But we've got an action-packed, jam-filled schedule throughout the next few months, but coming up in February, we've got hot off of the Undercover Boss, Dina Dwyer Owens is going to be talking about Undercover Boss behind the scenes and telling us what it was like to be on the show, give us kind of some insights on how these shows are put together and really what it meant for her company. And then we've got a terrific guest that our audience just loves to hear from, and that's Steve Caldera. From the IFA, and he's going to be talking about franchising in action. And Steve is just a terrific leader in franchising, of course, for the IFA, and we look forward to having him on the 16th. And then Nancy Weingartner is going to be coming back, and it's going to be about Franchise Times Talks Franchising. So Nancy has got a lot of insights in franchising as well. She knows what's happening behind the scenes. She's a shaker and a mover, and we look forward to hearing from Nancy and learning more about contemporary issues facing franchising and some of the innovations that are occurring.
And certainly these guests are going to be sandwiching the International Franchise Convention, the 52nd annual convention. That'll be in Orlando from February 11th through the 14th. It's amazing how they always do that around Valentine's Day. I'm sure there's a lot of spouses that are not too happy about that. But nevertheless, Dina Dwyer Owens, as you said, is going to be our guest on the 9th. And Dina was the IFA chairperson in 2010. So she's going to be able to also give us some perspective on the IFA convention from her opinion, spent a lot of years in franchising. Of course, coming out of the convention, Steve Caldera will be able to do the same, as well as moving us forward. And then I'm really looking forward also to Nancy Weingartner, the editor at the Franchise Times, and talking to her about the upcoming Legal Eagle nominations that are going to be announced in Franchise Times, which, of course, always seems to coincide with our franchise legal series here on Franchise Today, which will be from April 12th through May 24th. That's 7 weeks of some of the brightest minds, brightest legal minds in franchising, ending with a recap of the, at that time, will be the then completed IFA Legal Symposium. And in between the IFA, let's just call it March and into April, I think, Joe, we've got some really compelling guests. I know we have Lonnie Helgerson, who will be talking about military and franchising. And as everybody in franchising knows, Lonnie had spearheaded as committee chair the VetFran. And then we're going to follow up with Catherine Monson, who's on the IFA Executive Committee and at Fast Signs, and she'll be talking about their new push into international franchising. We'll be discussing some of the trials and tribulations of getting involved in international franchising. And then we're going to start, you know, gearing up on the financial side. And we've had a demand for a rebroadcast of Bob Coleman's segment, which was last week. So that'll be again on March 15th. And, of course, Bob is the editor of the Coleman Report, one of the leading sources on small business lending. And then we're going to follow that up with Franchise America Finance CEO Ron Feldman, who everybody in franchising knows is very big on small business lending. And that's going to lead us up into the Small Business Lending Summit on April 5th. Somebody from the IFA or from the Small Business Lending Summit committee will be on talking about the Small Business Lending Summit. And, Joe, you and I were at the first Small Business Lending Summit last year in Washington. And if this year's event is any follow suit, it's going to be a great event. And then in between that, on March 29th, Brad Fishman of Fishman Public Relations is going to kind of give us a little bit of a lighter look at franchising, as he will be coming out of the Franchise Unconference in Park City, Utah. So we really do have a packed schedule. And I know, Joe, recently you had Steve Caldera, the IFA CEO and president, at the Capital Area Franchise Association, of which you were president. And I know Steve talked a little bit about, you know, credit and lending and everything going on regarding franchising in Capitol Hill. And I'm sure, did he give any indication, any highlights about the Small Business Lending Summit, whether it be in the formal discussion or maybe sitting at the table enjoying lunch?
Well, certainly access to credit for franchisees, and of course it's important to franchisors because you don't get any development without any capital. He talked a lot about what was happening. He did talk about the success of the Small Business Lending Summit, and that was put on by the IFA and the National Restaurant Association and one or more of the banking associations, and a lot of good things were born out of that event last year that they were able to effectively work with folks in the Senate, folks in Congress, and the Obama administration in understanding the importance of credit access. I think the theme that Steve brought across at our meeting was that this is not just an encore of last year. This is taking it to the next level. And with Karen Mills of the SBA being made a cabinet-level position, I think that they view a lot more opportunity in making inroads to finding capital under the SBA 7A and the SBA 504 programs for franchisees. So I think that was the message that Steve very effectively got across to the group in attendance last month.
Well, thanks for putting a fine point on that. I think it is important that everybody know that this is not an encore performance. Thanks for putting that fine point on there. And certainly we met Ms. Mills last year, and it was just a great event, but a lot of work to do. It's definitely not a glad-handing type of event. I know there was a lot of very passionate people pounding their fist on the table and getting points across, and I'm sure this year will be this much of the same. And, Joe, as you know, today we're honored to have as our guest Stephanie Chandler. She's an author of several books, including her most recent one, Own Your Niche, Hype-Free Internet Marketing Tactics to Establish Authority in Your Field and Promote Your Service-Based Business. Stephanie's also the founder and CEO of BusinessInfoGuide.com, a directory of resources for entrepreneurs, and Authority Publishing, a custom publisher specializing in nonfiction books. Stephanie's been a frequent speaker at business events and on the radio. She's been featured in Entrepreneur Magazine, Business Week, and Wired Magazine, and she's a contributing blogger for Forbes Magazine. Stephanie, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thank you so much, Paul and Joe. It's great to be here.
Well, today, you know, the topic is make your social media efforts pay off. And so we have over the next 15 hours, no, the next 55 minutes or 50 minutes, certainly I'm sure we can talk about social media and business probably for the next 15 hours if somebody gives us the opportunity to do so. And I'm sure from looking through some of your information that you're as passionate about social media as I am. and how it works within business. But I want to talk first about your recent book. In your opinion, what does it mean to own your own niche?
Well, I just love the whole topic of owning your niche because we all have competitors in our field, but at the same time, we all have an opportunity to kind of stand out against the competition. And there's, you know, various ways we can do that. The bottom line is it all comes down to giving great content to your audience and really demonstrating your authority in your field and what it is you know about your audience and how you reach your audience, your niche audience, and connect with what they need and what they want.
So, you know, we hear a lot in digital marketing worlds and in social media and social media marketing about content, and everybody's pointing towards, you know, content being king. How important is the relevancy and the how important is the relevancy of content?
Well, it's essential to promote online in particular. And the reason for that is Google really likes websites with a lot of content. For example, you know, one of the biggest mistakes you can make is to not update your website. If you let it sit idle for, you know, weeks or months at a time without adding or changing content, Google views your site as less relevant than competing sites that are adding content on a regular basis. So, you know, today more than ever, blogging is incredibly powerful for businesses. If you can update and add content to a blog two or three times a week, I promise you, you're going to see more traffic coming from Google. And then, you know, there's other kinds of content too. Videos are really powerful. If you do a Google search for just about any topic, how to bake a pie, how to change a muffler, it's going to show a YouTube video in the top five results. That's just the reality of how much YouTube has taken over in search. So things like that are just a wonderful way to find and build your audience.
Well, certainly it definitely helps that Google owns YouTube.
Yeah, well.
So when we talk about, you know, websites, the old way of websites is you spent a lot of time, you spent a lot of money, dedicate a lot of resources towards building a website, state-of-the-art website, and then it was just there. So now what you're saying is it's good to go in there and repeatedly update as much as possible. And, of course, in today's day and age with dashboards, it's certainly a lot easier to do so. How important are, you know, keywords and being placed within the content marketing in the updates today as opposed to what it might have been 10 years ago?
Keywords are still incredibly important. And so every website needs a keyword strategy. And that means choosing a key phrase, ideally, that your customers would use to find you, and then assigning a phrase to each page on your website. So you can have, you know, every page on your site can have a different set of keywords that potentially can attract people through search. And you want to take those keywords and you want to put them into the title on the page, which is what you see in the browser bar. You want to put them in the description for the page. You want to put them in the heading for that page, the text heading that you see on the page. And repeat the phrase at least one or two more times within the text on the page. Because Google really pays attention to text, and it looks for keyword concentration. You know, if you own a flower shop in Miami, you want to make sure you have Miami flowers, flower delivery Miami, wedding flowers Miami. These are the things that you want to target on your individual pages. Very important. It will make a difference.
So you emphasize targets. And, of course, in some of your writing, you emphasize target audience. And then, of course, the importance of community. And, of course, that lends towards, you know, social media. So how does that all factor into marketing online today?
Well, you know, what I love about this, I've been marketing online since 2003. I was blogging before I knew what a blog was. And social media has been just a fabulous game changer. it's making it easier to reach a wider audience. And it's, you know, it's another tool in your marketing toolbox. And so it's, in my opinion, it's kind of crazy to ignore it. It's something we need to embrace. I know a lot of people still have a lot of fear around social media and how much time it's going to take. It does not have to be that complicated, and it is just a remarkable way to build a community, you know, a community that you're going to have when you need them. Social media is not about selling, selling, selling. It's about sharing, 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 and I think that's probably the most important point to remember.
Absolutely, and you mentioned about, you know, a lot of individuals feeling that social media is so time-consuming. So in a few quick tips, you know, how do you suggest that they can make it more manageable?
Yes, you need tools to help manage it. I use TweetDeck, which is a free tool you can use to manage your Twitter stream. It also allows you to see your Facebook feed, makes it very easy to quickly reply and retweet people's content. I couldn't do it without it. My other favorite tool is Hootsuite, H-O-O-T-S-U-I-T-E, Hootsuite.com. Again, it's a free one. You can use this to schedule content to post to your various social media networks. And I highly recommend that too, because though you should definitely have some live interaction with your social media profiles, you also want to make it easier on yourself and pre-schedule some things. You know, for I write blog posts up to 2 weeks in advance, and I will pre-schedule those to go out when they are going to publish. So that's a really big time saver right there. And then it's also some discipline. You know, it's very easy to hop on Facebook and spend an hour there. So you've got to kind of train yourself not to let time get away from you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely hear you and agree about, you know, sharing information and, of course, you know, engaging with customers. And I know you'll probably agree with this, but I, you know, caution all the time small business owners to not get so wrapped up in the automated messaging at the expense of possibly missing some comments or even complaints by customers that now might think that because they see these posts coming in and yet their comment or complaint has not been responded to. We do have to remember that this is all social, and common courtesy applies. You know, I know, and I wanted to mention the point. You know, we were talking about keywords, and I know Joe is very passionate about this whole keyword chaos that seems to go on. Joe, what question did you have for Stephanie with respect to keyword chaos?
Well, within a franchising context, Stephanie, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but there's some unique applications of the use of keywords in SEO within franchising, because you've got multiple locations in a given market, you've got multiple locations around the country, and you've got basically a mothership kind of website that is the brand. And then you may have microsites or individual sites for franchisees. What happens when you've got 20 franchisees in the Sacramento market and they're competing and creating chaos with their keywords within their websites?
Boy, that's tough. You know, I don't know how you do that. I think that comes from management of the franchises themselves or coming up with a strategy that allows them all equal exposure. Maybe it's one main site that dedicates a page to each of the locations. You know, you can absolutely optimize an individual page within a website, but when you have, like you said, in the Sacramento market, 20 of the same type of business, that's really going to be tough, and I can see where that can cause some friction amongst the various business owners there. I'm really not sure how you address that. That's got to be some sort of policy or procedure thing.
Yeah, and I apologize in advance for putting you on the spot, because I kind of knew I would be putting you on the spot. But it is a dilemma, and it really shines a bright light on the franchisor taking the lead on their SEO strategy and on their social media strategy and really guiding the franchisees. Because in some cases, you may actually have a franchisee that is more in tune with SEO and more in tune with social media marketing than some of the people within the franchisor, especially some of the smaller franchisors.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that lends towards collaboration. I've seen some franchisors that want to take the lead and total control, and that's just a recipe for disaster, especially trying to get the message out at the local level. And when there isn't some type of control or leadership, such as another organization I'm working with right now that has 900 locations, and I won't mention their name because it's not fair because they're in the process of changing it, and maybe someday we'll use it as a case study, but they literally had 900-plus unique Facebook sites out there that had no consistency, no uniformity, even in the titles, messaging, et cetera. You would never think they were part of a larger brand. So, I mean, those are two opposite ends of the spectrum. You know, a lot of people, Stephanie, think of social media, and they only think of, you know, Facebook, and then some others that have a little bit more knowledge will add Twitter and LinkedIn into the mix. And as we know, there's a whole world of social media, and then, of course, social media technology and tools that you mentioned, like TweetDeck and Hootsuite. But where do blogs fit into the equation, and how can a blog benefit a business?
Well, to me, a blog is the heart of your social media strategy. So it's the destination for your prospects and your clients to interact with you, and it's the place that you send your social media followers to. So you want to take each new blog post and share it on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and Google+ with a link that comes back to the blog. And that is how you start to benefit social media generating traffic back to your website.
Very interesting. So your philosophy is make the blog the center of the entire social media program.
Without a doubt, because that's where your traffic can come from. That becomes that great content that you share that engages your audience, and it's just incredibly powerful.
How do you respond then to the individuals, small business owners that say, "For God, Stephanie, I mean, you're a great writer. That seems simple for you, but I have a hard time writing, and I'm not sure I can do that."
Well, that is a challenge. If you're not a writer, you've got to find a solution. So you've got a lot of options. Certainly, you can hire a copywriter. You can use software like that Dragon Naturally Speaking that will transcribe your words and write that way by speaking. You can certainly put video up on your blog, which is also great for Google traffic, but I still recommend that you also add text-based content because Google still crawls text looking for that keyword concentration and what the theme of the page is. But you do have to find a way to get somebody from your staff. You can get your clients and your peers to write guest blog posts for you. You know, there's lots of ways to generate blog content without having to do it all.
Right. And then what I always recommend is, you know, if you're going to do that, you know, put in at least an opening paragraph from you leading into it. And then, of course, that lends to the millions and millions of other blogs that are out there. What is the protocol for using some content from other blogs that might be out there?
Oh, yeah. You have to be really careful with copyright laws because you can't directly quote another book, a website, a source without express permission. You know, one or two sentences are fine as long as you're crediting your source. But if you're looking at wanting to share a paragraph or more of somebody's information, you definitely want to contact them first and get their permission and ask them how they want to be attributed in that post.
Okay. Well, that's a good point to know. And then, of course, we all know about the FTC's, or maybe we don't. Maybe we need to explain that. The FTC rule with respect to bloggers being endorsed. How does that all work?
Oh, goodness. The FTC is not making it easy for any of us who are doing business online. There is, you know, a 20-page document out there about their new guidelines, but you have to be really careful about testimonials that you share on your site, that they don't overpromise. If you're going to, for example, share an affiliate link and you're going to get paid for promoting something, you need to disclose that to your audience. So those are probably the two main concerns to be aware of. But definitely look up the FTC guidelines so that you understand the rules. And if you read it, you probably won't understand it. So Google some people who've done a good job of summarizing it. But the two main points are they want more transparency in how we're doing business online. So you can't have testimonials that promise that you will absolutely get these results. You will lose 50 pounds in 30 days. If it's an overhyped, over-delivered testimonial, the FTC is not going to like it. And I will tell you that my understanding is you get a warning before you get an actual fine. So, you know, don't panic. You have some time to deal with issues if you think you may have them.
So really, I mean, again, you know, lending towards what I said about, you know, social and you had mentioned about transparency. I mean, it really all comes back to, you know, truth, developing trust, having full transparency, doing things the right way if you're going to try to scam somebody by saying, you know, you can lose 50 pounds in 30 days. You know, obviously, we know it's not true, and those are the type of things that are going to pop up as warning signs and warning flags. And, you know, talking about social media, we can't help not talk about, you know, Google+. We mentioned about how powerful Google is in the search. We talked briefly about YouTube, and we know Google owns YouTube. And when Google Plus came out, Google came out and said, you know, we're no longer going to deal with our real-time search initiative, meaning that social media content and activity will drive search results. And of course, I know Twitter and Facebook are going back and forth, firing a bunch of shots, a couple of rockets across each other's bow, if you would, about that. And I know the Twitter CEO came out the other day and said Google's got all the information that they need, all the data and everything that they need in order to get Twitter into the search results. Google is still claiming that they don't, but of course, ironically or not, coincidentally or not, and I'm not one to believe in coincidences, that those real-time search initiative got dropped when Google Plus got released. So what are your thoughts about Google Plus for business moving forward?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm experiencing with Google Plus is that when I share something on Google Plus, for example, a link back to my blog, which is my main social media strategy, I find it's showing up better in search. You know, like a lot of marketers, I find it frustrating. I didn't want to add another social network to have to manage. And I've personally had a hard time getting in the habit of posting stuff to Google Plus, but the reality is Google is giving it priority in search. And so if you want your content to show up, you have to get in the habit of sharing it on Google Plus too. It's just
absolutely
the reality
I
of what
am,
do. Yeah.
Yeah, I am with you on that. I went kicking hard not to have to bring in another platform. But apparently Google Plus is definitely here to stay. I heard a couple of weeks ago they're up to 90 million users. But I thought an interesting fact, if you call it that, but an interesting bit of information that I read was that even though it's up to 90 million users so far, in December it actually had less traffic and activity than MySpace. So it tells me right there that a lot of people jumped on board thinking that, oh, my God, I have to be here. I don't want to miss the next Facebook, if you would. But I think a lot of people are confused as to how it all works. So it'll be interesting to see what the next 6 to 12 months brings us with respect to Google+. We're live here today. It's Franchise Today. I'm Paul Segretto. On the line with me today is co-producer Joe Caruso, as well as our special guest, Stephanie Chandler. If you aren't with us at the top of the hour, Stephanie is a speaker and author of several books, including her most recent one, Own Your Own Niche, and she's also founder and CEO of BusinessInfoGuide.com. Stephanie, you know, looking at some of your information, I was really intrigued by BusinessInfoGuide.com. What's the objective and thought behind such a great resource for entrepreneurs?
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, I quit my Silicon Valley software sales job back in 2003 and wanted to be a writer. That's all I knew I wanted to do. But I quit this job, and I actually opened a bookstore in Sacramento. And my big master plan was I was going to sit in the back office and write novels, which I just laugh about so much today. So what happened in that whole process, I have a 2,800-square-foot bookstore. About 6 weeks after I opened it, I went, oh, my gosh, what have I done? I do not want to run a retail business. You know, I had been on the road for years, and suddenly I was kind of trapped in this store and dealing with employees, and I really never liked managing staff. And I found out I was a lousy novelist, and I thought, well, you know, I still want to write. I know I'm meant to write. And I thought, you know, I'm going to write the books that I want to read, I wanted to read. And that first experience was I wrote a business startup book. I had read all these startup guides, and none of them gave me the real practical things that I needed to know, like how to negotiate a commercial lease, you know, things like that. So I wrote this book, and my real inspiration was, how can I show people there can be life after corporate America, right? Because I had so many people calling me from the Silicon Valley saying, you know, we wish we had the courage to do what you're doing. We can't leave our jobs. And so Business Info Guide was born from that experience. I wanted to build an audience for that first book, and I thought, gosh, I've got all these resources. I can share them online. I wonder how this is going to work. I was just figuring things out as I went. But I really wanted to create a different kind of resource for entrepreneurs and aspiring entrepreneurs. And it's just evolved over the years. There are several thousand pages of content on there now, lots of articles. And I love hardcore resources. I love links and, you know, quick tips on how to do things. So that's the real philosophy behind that site.
Well, it's really intriguing, and you know, today we're talking about social media. We're branching into different things, and we really need to be looking at, you know, this whole digital environment for the small business owner. So, you know, my word of caution to the business owners that are out there listening today is, you know, don't just look at social media as just this small box with, you know, those familiar icons in them like Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn, and now, you know, I'm sure you'll be adding Google Plus, that, you know, blogs, these different resources are really important. And it's one of the big reasons why I'm mentioning Stephanie's site, BusinessInfoGuide.com, because as you heard Stephanie say, you know, the blog, that's the heart of her entire strategy. She has BusinessInfoGuide.com, and then, of course, Stephanie, there's also StephanieChandler.com, which is another website. There's links back and forth. And I'm a big promoter of cross-platform, multi-tiered effect in digital marketing. And you apparently have done that quite well, looking at your sites, seeing it, how it's all linked together. Give us some of your insight on how this web, if you would, no pun intended, because of the World Wide Web, how does this all fit together and create that type of cross-platform effect?
Well, you know, I'll tell you that the biggest lesson I can give you from all of this is what I've done with Business Info Guide is built basically a community. I have regular site visitors. A couple of years ago, I opened it up to allow others to contribute content to the site. We do interviews and guest articles. And what it's done is it's created a lot of loyalty. There's a lot of content there that gets shared on social media. And, you know, if you really want to reach a major audience, this is a great way to do it. Not enough people take advantage of this opportunity to create kind of a niche site for your audience. And for me, I added the Stephanie Chandler site because I wanted kind of a landing place for media to find me as an author and a speaker. And it works out nicely that I am able to cross-promote between the two and still generate traffic on both sites. So they complement each other nicely. They serve kind of two different purposes because the Business Info Guide site is more for, you know, the reader, the consumer, the entrepreneur, where my personal site is more for media and opportunity speaking opportunities and things like that.
So you have the two sites, you have your blog, it's all tied together. How does the true or more common social media of Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn interact with these two sites?
Business Info Guide is my main focus for the social media. So, and I think this is also really important action, is to put those social sharing buttons on your blog so that readers can tweet it or like it on Facebook and things like that. So that's a really important part of that strategy. My Stephanie Chandler site is not something I tweet out, but what I did do, which is another little tip, is I had my web designer add in recent tweets so that you could see my automatic Twitter feed onto the site there. And I also have a feed of my blog posts from Business Info Guide going to stephaniechandler.com. So that's another way to really tie them together and get the most value out of both sites.
Yeah, absolutely. I could see how that works, but I'm glad that you gave us a little bit of insight into that because, you know, this is a three social media and using it effectively is a three-dimensional approach. And I know I often use the analogy or the difference, the analogy for the difference between traditional marketing and today's new age marketing, digital marketing, as the difference between the tic-tac-toe board with four lines, nine spaces. You win, lose, or draw in a matter of seconds, and then compare it to what I refer to as the tic-tac-toe board on steroids, which is a Rubik's Cube, which creates that cross-platform multi-tiered effect, and you keep moving it around and moving it around. And either you're going to win or you're going to quit. You can't lose unless you quit. So for the people there that are finding it difficult, you know, entering and maintaining their activity in social media, don't quit. Keep plugging away. It's something that will definitely grow. So how does, Stephanie, how does PR, public relations, fit into this whole mix with social media and blogs and what have you?
Well, you know, PR has evolved with the times as well, right? And so, you know, you don't just have your standard news reporters and producers and editors. You now have internet media. You have bloggers who have tremendous influence with their audience. So social media is a surprisingly powerful way to reach the media. I have gotten a number of interviews based on my Twitter, and I'll tell you exactly what I did. I found a list of media people on Twitter. I decided I'm going to follow them all because maybe they'll check me out and find out who I am. And I don't know, a week, 10 days later, I had an interview for a major magazine from that. So media has changed. You know, here I am talking to you. My assistant pitched me as a guest to your program. You know,
mm-hmm.
So we have such a different opportunity to reach media easier than ever, without having to spend a lot of money, and your social media presence is going to affect that. Having a really good web presence, a website, you know, is also incredibly important because you want to demonstrate you're a professional, you're an authority in your field. I'm a huge advocate of writing a book. I think a book is a great tool for building a business. So media is changing.
Yeah,
PR is trend. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, we'd be remiss in not talking about email marketing and some electronic newsletters as being part of the mix, especially as organizations and platforms like Constant Contact continues to build some really great social technology tools built into the email platform. So, and I think I know this answer, but I'll ask the question. In your opinion, are electronic newsletters still a good tool for business?
Absolutely. You know, it's harder than ever to get people to give up an email address, right? But
yeah.
But there's still no engagement like a newsletter because, or, you know, your email marketing strategy. Because when people do give you their email address, they're giving you permission to market to them. That's so powerful. And so the way I view email marketing is that you have to be really respectful of your list, of the people who sign up. I don't know about you, but I get so tired of the frequent emails that come too often. You know, that's the quickest way to get people to unsubscribe. So you want to send email that makes a difference, that really affects people. You know, for retailers and restaurant owners, people are looking for discounts and coupons and things like that. But, you know, that's how you engage. I remember when back when I had my bookstore, which I ultimately sold, by the way, we used to do a printed newsletter. And at some point I decided, well, let's do an e-newsletter and see how that goes. Well, I used to have to carefully plan when I sent a newsletter out because it would inevitably bring people in the door, and I had to make sure we were staffed for it. It was like a magic wand to bring business in. So it's incredibly powerful if you can figure out what your audience wants and how to use it, you know, to your benefit and theirs.
You know, I know, Joe, we talk a lot about target audience in everything that we talk about, whether it be from a franchise sales perspective, a recruitment perspective, from a consumer marketing perspective. Did you have any questions for Stephanie with respect to target audiences?
I mean, a comment and a question. Why does it seem so hard for business owners / marketers to identify their target audience? Is it that they're lazy, or is it just something that is just too difficult for them to figure out?
I think some of it comes from fear. You know, my whole concept around Own Your Niche is that most of us cast our net too wide. You know, even with Business Info Guide, when I started, I mean, I had this lofty goal of reaching every aspiring entrepreneur. And that was, that's not a target. That's not narrowing a focus. And so, you know, that has evolved to focusing more on service-based businesses. And so I think that people are probably, number one, afraid if they narrow their focus, they're going to lose some business. And number two, they probably don't know how to do that research, how to figure out what the niche is. And so, you know, that's part of it, is figuring out the right niche to target, how you can access them, and how to build your business that way without cutting, you know, your revenues off. You can still serve your legacy clients, but when you start to shift your focus to a specific niche, your audience identifies better with your messaging, and it is amazing what happens as a result of that.
You know, we were talking earlier in the preamble to the show about franchising and credit access. I think a topic of equal importance to credit access to the franchisor community, which is a big portion of our audience, is lead generation. And this casting a wide net seems to be a perpetual problem with franchisors. It's almost as though there's not a lead that they don't want to get, or there's not an inquiry about their franchise that they don't want to get. And they're afraid if they define the criteria, define the profile of whom they're looking for from a character and an attitude and aptitude standpoint and a financial standpoint, somehow they will miss out. And it oftentimes falls on deaf ears, what you're saying, to really remove that fear and focus down and drill down. How would you suggest to franchisors if they want to improve their lead generation, what should they do?
You need to really figure out what your target demographic is. Look at your existing client base. What do they have in common? You know, I was just talking to an owner of a dog daycare center, and they do a ton of paid advertising, all different kinds of formats. And he said to me, you know, I'm just tired of doing so many things. I'm just going to start running mailing lists to people in a 15-mile radius that make $200,000 or more. That is a target. That is a great target. And I guarantee you that's going to be a really successful campaign. So it's figuring out what your demographic is. And I know a lot of franchises serve local communities, right? You're either residents or businesses. You know, don't discount old-school marketing. I know we're here to talk about social media today, but with local marketing, you still have the door hangers on a neighborhood. They're still effective. They're still powerful. So, you know, I do believe you still need a web presence. You want to optimize your site and all of those things. But figure out your niche, and locally, don't discount the other ways that you can reach that audience.
You know, in talking about traditional marketing, I totally hear what you're saying, and I agree. And I guess the added advice I would give, too, is that, you know, when you do something, and this message is for the small business owners out there, when you do something, look at how you can expand that reach, such as putting a door hanger on there. Obviously, make sure your website is on there. Make sure that if you're on Facebook, the Facebook icon is in there, or Twitter or whatever, and try to pull people back into your social media presence. As well, and we've used this successfully for some clients, you know, put out on Facebook, you know, hey, look for our door hangers. Try to cross-reference it. I know we did that with one of my clients is in a national publication, a design publication, and believe it or not, in today's day and age, this publication, which is a very, very popular publication, does not have a digital presence. It does not have a digital edition. So it's hard to cross-reference, but what we've done is we've built a large Facebook base, and when the ad in the magazine is coming out, we tell them, look for us on page 73 in the February issue of blah, blah, blah. And usually that publication or those type of publications also have a Facebook presence, and we tag it, and it's worked that way as opposed to, you know, just running the ad or just placing the door hanger. That cross-marketing definitely works. And, you know, looking, Stephanie, at your bio and certain information, and I think this lends really well to the whole social media and what we spoke about earlier about sharing. It seemed like with the inspiration that you had to helping other people, providing other people information, it's probably been a great aspect and a great thing that has helped you succeed. How important, whether it be in your website, whether it be on your blog, whether it be on your social media, how important is it to share information? And I guess the fine point is to convince, especially as we're talking about franchising, to convince a lot of people in franchising that it's okay to share information, because a lot of people think that, oh my God, the stuff that I have is so proprietary, I don't want anybody else to know I've got the holy grail. How important is it to share information?
Oh, I'm all about sharing information. You know, give away your best content. I am a speaker. I give away everything. Because, you know, people, first of all, we only retain, what, less than 10% of what we hear. And they're going to want more from you. That's how you build trust. That's how you, you know, you build your community. So give it away. And, you know, I just want to add on what you said about tying in your local marketing with your social media. You know, I'm seeing more and more restaurants saying, you know, you walk in the door and they say, like us on Facebook and you'll get a discount tonight. And, you know, people are whipping out their smartphones to do that. These are great ways to get people engaged. So, sorry, well, I had to go back to that.
No, that's fine. That's what this is about. And I guess, you know, being you open that door, we can't help talking about mobile and not talking about social media. And I do a lot of work with children's entertainment franchises. And obviously, our target audience are moms. And, of course, we know all about the mommy bloggers and the great influence that they have on digital journalism and everything online. They're just a fantastic influencer. But, you know, I heard that or read somewhere that, you know, moms of school-age children are accessing information, talking on their phone, texting, search, communicating, et cetera, 7.3 hours a day on their mobile device. And, of course, that mobile device could also be a tablet. So, you know, how important is mobile, in your mind, playing into the whole digital marketing, social media environment?
Oh, I think it's huge, and I don't know what the current statistic is, but I know most of us are looking at Facebook on mobile. And also we have to get our websites mobile ready, which means that, you know, get up your smartphone and look at your website on it and see if it's formatted properly, if it's easy to navigate. Otherwise, you want to talk to your web person about creating a mobile-ready version of your website so that when somebody pulls it up on their phone, it's easy to find. And, you know, with a local business, you want to have maybe a link to directions or something like that. So mobile is very important. I'm not a huge fan of the whole texting to mobile. There are certainly situations where it's a great way to engage your audience, but for most businesses, people are going to tire of text messages from businesses very quickly. And we also have to look at the new generation that's coming up and how much spending they're going to be doing. They're all mobile. You know, the kids right now are all mobile. So
I know talking to some of the younger generation, when you mention the word technology, they kind of look at you and say, what are you talking about technology? This is every day to us. Technology is supposed to be something, you know, cutting edge, and this is not cutting edge. I mean, they're communicating and sharing and everything, you know, while they're playing video games. And I think a key point to this whole thing, too, is that we talked about influencers, that they are a big influential demographic group to the older generation that knows now, you know what, I need to access this stuff online, might not know how to do it, so they go to their grandchild or to one of their kids and say, you know, help me with this. Well, certainly now that buying attitude that the younger generation has is going to help influence even the older generation's buying motivation. So, you know, mobile is definitely playing into the equation. And to a fine point to what you said about mobile sites. I think, number one, of course, it has to look good on the mobile device. But one of the things that I would caution people is make sure the links work and make sure that they work in such a way that they're going to populate quickly. If there's a lot of, you know, if people are still using Flash and what have you, it's not. People are just going to say, I got to go on to the next thing. They're not going to wait for it to load. And then, of course, like you said, on a mobile device, have directions, and I think it's also important to make sure you have the proper hyperlink for your phone number, so that's all they need to do is click on the phone number, and it rings as opposed to them having to save it or remember the phone number or what have you. And certainly smart devices are building more and more of that technology in. So, to me, it is a great world. It's fantastic for marketers and business owners alike. I think the only thing that we're limited by is our own creativity and imagination. As we're getting close to the top of the hour, Stephanie, I know you have another engagement. So for the next couple of minutes, why don't you tell us about some of the things that you have to offer to our listening audience?
Thank you, Paul. Yeah, my new book is out. It's called Own Your Niche, and I would love to give away 5 digital copies to listeners today. And so I've got a page on the site. Go to businessinfoguide.com/radio, businessinfoguide.com/radio, and fill out the contact information. I'll pick 5 winners by the end of the day. We'll email you your copy. We'll let Paul know about the winners, and that would be great. And, of course, the book's available on Amazon, and you can find more information about it on the site. But almost everything we discussed today is topics that we cover in the book.
Yeah, it's great. I appreciate you providing that for our listening audience. It's a nice offer. Stephanie's two sites are stephaniechandler.com, as well as businessinfoguide.com, expired resources for entrepreneurs. There's a whole bunch of different categories on there: business development, business growth, marketing, industry guides, a link to her blog, and then, of course, to a store. I think it's a great site, and I've already started using it. Stephanie, I really appreciate the time for you being with us today. I'd love to talk with you again in the future. Maybe in the fall we'll circle back with each other, and maybe you'll have a new book out by then.
I'd love that, Paul. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Joe, that was pretty interesting, wasn't it?
Yes, certainly was, Mr. Paul.
You know, we always talk a lot about communications. We talk about sharing. We talk about discussions on the various social networks. And I think, you know, the one thing that I'd like listeners to come away from today is to share information, as well as what Stephanie indicated in her response to you about, you know, people trying to, you know, identify who their target audience is. And it's that big fear factor. I mean, how do people get over that fear factor?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think with social media, a simple thing that people can do, and they can begin right now, is to use the same common sense, assuming they have common sense, but use the same common sense that you have in your physical world interactions, and being respectful and being conscious of who you're talking to, and engage your audience. You know, within social media, as most of us are very involved in, you know, we see things that just make us shake our heads in discussion forums, on LinkedIn, on Facebook, and you have to ask yourself, why in the heck did that person do that? They would never have done that had they been in a social interaction at a networking meeting where you're physically there, or at a conference, or in their office, or at the convenience store, or in a restaurant. They would never do these things. And yet, within social media, where it lives forever, they do things that are just astounding, and they're out there and for everyone to see. I mean, you're really naked in the wind.
Yeah, absolutely. Just had the visual of being naked in the wind, not a pretty sight. You know, we're coming into what I feel is really a great time in franchising. It actually, to me, started last week in Miami at the Franchise Expo South, which I thought was a very successful event. Certainly, there was a lot more activity and traffic than there was at the West Coast Franchise Expo. Maybe it's because it's at the beginning of the new year, and people are looking at what they need to do in 2012 and beyond, the whole control your own destiny, be your own boss, and what have you. But it really seemed like there was a lot of activity, and of course, we have the IFA convention coming up. There's the MFA Expo in London, which I understand is really going to be quite busy, at least by early comments and stuff. And then, of course, we lead into multi-unit franchising conference, there's the Franchise Un conference. We start getting into the franchise legal series on Franchise Today, all the way up to the International Franchise Expo in June in New York City. So this is a great spell for franchising, sort of Small Business Lending Summit. And I think, Joe, we're going to be quite busy moving forward over the next 4 or 5 months. And as always, I appreciate what you do for Franchise Today, put together a great show. And future shows, I'm sure, will be right in line. Thanks, of course, for being part of Franchise Today.
Oh, my pleasure, Paul.
Until next week, when we have Dina Dwyer-Owens on as our guest, telling us about behind the scenes at the Undercover Boss. My name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best the very best in this very great thing we call franchising. Till then, Franchise Today is out.